Genug vom täglichen Grind. Spiele Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und grinde, als wär's 2002. Ein legendäres Remake der Originalspiele mit neuen Parks, krasseren Tricks, plattformübergreifendem Multiplayer und abgefahrenen neuen Spielmodi. Hol dir das neue Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 und 4 und zeig der Welt, der Shred stirbt nie. Jetzt vorbestellen auf tonyhawkthegame.com/playnow. Verfügbar ab dem 11. Juli.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, and with me today is Nadia Oxford.
Hello.
And as always, we talk about RPGs big and small, Western and Eastern, and we break them down because we love this genre. It's the best genre. Role-playing games.
I agree. Woo. Totally the best. 100%. A+.
And this week, we will be talking about Dragon Quest Builders, which is getting reviewed over on the site by our fearless leader. We will be talking about the update to Stardew Valley. We'll be talking about SteamWorld Heist, which I freaking loved, and Nadia is playing right now. And we'll be talking about Yo-Kai Watch, which Bob recently reviewed. He has some thoughts on that, and maybe just a smidge of VR talk. Don't worry, we won't get too much into it. I know. Yeah. All right, but let's go to immediately to our first topic, which is Dragon Quest Builders. Nadia, you've been playing the demo, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I actually finished the demo. It's not a very long demo. Have you played it at all, Kat?
I have not. I've been kind of waiting for the Vita code to be coming in.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if the demo is even available on Vita yet. I think it is. But either way, I played it. I enjoyed it very much. It has a few little issues that Parrish has already addressed in his review, which is up on the site. For one thing, if you're expecting something quite as, like, loose as Minecraft in terms of building, Dragon Quest Builders is not quite it. It's a very structured kind of building game, which is okay for many people who are looking forward to the game because that's precisely what we want. We want structure, we want rules, but this isn't like the kind of game where you can like jump 5 times your height, you know what I mean? Like, you can, most of the structures you build are like 2 blocks high. I'm sure you can go higher, but I haven't done that in the demo.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you've played Minecraft, and you've paid attention to the world.
Yes.
A lot of Minecraft's popularity stems, A, from its accessibility, but also, B, from its fan mods. Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
Yes, that's true.
I mean, like, so much of Minecraft is like, you're out in the world, you get to build these things. It's like Legos, like, it's the original Lego video game, essentially. And
yeah.
And the freedom that it gives people to do crazy, stupid things is, like, really exciting, right?
Yeah.
But if you take that out of Dragon Quest Builders, I mean, isn't that a problem?
Well, I don't know. You have, the thing about Minecraft is, even though I like it, I've never been good at it. I'm the kind of person who is really proud of herself that she built a house that has windows in it, whereas people, of course, build these crazy structures. But if you look at, like, Japanese screenshots of people who have been playing the game for a while now over there, you see some really beautiful structures. Nothing quite as wild as Minecraft. Like, I have yet to see, you know, massive dragons sprawling out across the land the way I see with Minecraft, but of course I haven't looked too hard. I've seen several phallic images, of course, but those are kind of...
Of course.
Those are a gimme. So...
Shock and surprise.
Yeah. But the meat of Dragon Quest Builder seems to be more about rebuilding rather than building, like, out of scratch. You start in Cantalan, which is a town from the original Dragon Quest, and anyone who's a Dragon Quest fan knows Cantalan was a very sort of almost like a modern looking town as far as Dragon Quest goes. It was like it was all brick, there were walls, it was guarded by a golem. So your first task really is to kind of restore the town to that glory. And so you have a pretty big building project in front of you, but you don't have as much freedom to go completely wild.
So so tell me a little bit about, like, building up the town. Like, is it fun? Is it kind of repetitive?
I found it very rewarding because even though you do have this guideline that you should adhere to, like, for example, one of your first tasks is build a room for this girl who's kind of wandered in and saying hi to you. you can make that structure however you want it to look like. It just had to adhere to a certain amount of rules, which is, number one, it had to have a door. Number two, a room had to be two bricks high, basically. And number three, I think it had to have a light source. But if you have all those prerequisites, the shell itself can look however you want, although early in the game, you don't have a lot of tools to build with. You basically have dirt. That is your building material. Dirt and straw.
Go ahead.
So I'm looking forward to the point in the game where I can kind of tear down my old houses and all embarrassed and build up like nice, shiny new ones.
So as a longtime Dragon Quest fan, which we've definitely established on this podcast,
yes.
How do you think it fits in with the universe?
I think it's a very interesting take on the original Dragon Quest story because, of course, it's kind of an alternate timeline where the hero, Erdrick, or whatever you want to call him, or the descendant of Erdrick, rather, he said yes to the Dragon Lord's offer of, do you want to rule the world with me? And the guy was like, okay. So basically now you have a world of darkness, which is, you know, devoid of hope and anything like companionship. So
good job, Erdrick.
Yeah. Number one, good job.
Wrong answer.
Yeah, especially since the Dragon Lord crashes your game if you say yes. But so now instead of the game makes it a point to say you are not a hero. You don't build yourself up through fighting and demolishing monsters. You build yourself up through building and creating. So I guess the god figure in this game, who happens to be Rubus, she said, okay, well, I screwed up the first time, I guess. Next time I'll try the power of creation rather than destruction. So that's where we are.
Oh, well, okay then.
Yeah. That's...
How about the RPG elements?
You don't get, as I said, you don't strengthen yourself by fighting. You don't gain experience that way. Rather, the things you build are what make you stronger. For example, armor, weapons... It is very much like Minecraft in that regard. Although I think Minecraft, you do level up a bit, but basically to get your max hit points up, you have to find seeds of life in chests. You do have to beat up monsters. Not only some of them try to attack your town, some of them just get in your way, some guard chests that you want. That's just the demo, too. Who knows what's beyond?
Well, okay. I'm fairly interested. I've never been a big fan of these kinds of building games.
Mm-hmm.
Too much freedom. Hate it.
Yeah, exactly. This is definitely a little more reined in, and I am okay with that. I can see a kid who's really obsessed with Minecraft. I can see them being like, oh, I don't like the fact that I'm restricted to all these rules. I'm going to go back to Minecraft. But for people like you and me who like to have a little structure in their building games, it's a very nice balance, and I enjoy it very much.
Do you plan on playing it on the Vita or the PlayStation 4?
Probably the PlayStation 4 at first, because that's where it's coming out. Like, that's what I have for now. I don't have my Vita yet. So.
Yeah, I'm a little wary of playing it on the Vita, because... So Darkest Dungeon came out on the Vita not too long ago.
Uh-huh.
This is totally a sidetrack, but whatever. It's RPG related.
Yeah, that's right.
I downloaded Darkest Dungeon onto my Vita because I'm like, oh man, maybe I can like start a new run and like have a good time and everything. And holy crap, that series is not made for the Vita.
Oh, is it too
dark? The text is way too small.
Oh.
The UI is like a really clumsy refashioning of the PC point and click interface.
That's too bad.
And I'm like, wow, this is really awkward. Like, I can't play this. And that was that. So.
Yeah, just kids today, of course, they play Minecraft on mobile without a problem, but I'm old, I have vision problems. I'd rather give it a try on the PS4 first, especially since 3D games, I tend to be kind of sensitive to those in terms of headaches and nausea, so...
Darkest Dungeon would be so good on tablet.
I need to play that game. It looks so good.
It's good. And we talked about it a lot on the podcast earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think my problem with it is that after the first string of dungeons, like, there's a point in the game where you really run out of gas.
Right.
Because you kind of hit a wall where you have to grind and grind and grind.
Mm-hmm.
And you can build up a really good party,
right,
but you are always, like, one step from disaster.
Yeah.
And if that party gets wiped, Like, you can lose so much progress. Like, yeah. There's a great video of somebody, like, they were just kind of showing off on their stream with, like, their super high-level party fighting, I think it's called, like, the Shambler or something like that. It's basically, like, this Cthulhu-esque, like, backdrop of stars, the kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it shows up when it's dark out.
Right.
Or when it's dark. And things went wrong, and the whole party got wiped. And by the end, like, you could just see him staring at the screen like, because that was a top level party. That was hours and hours and hours. Like, that was an endgame party that he lost.
Oh, no. And I assume this is a permadeath sort of thing.
Yeah. They die and it saves. Like, there's no going back.
Yeah, that sort of thing would make me very sad. So maybe I'll put it on my maybe list for now.
And not only that, like, you really have to, you can't just wing it, because mm-hmm. you have to go in there and you have to have a really firm understanding of the positive quirks versus the negative quirks, because the negative quirks can have a real bad impact mm-hmm. on your party. You need to know, like, what quirks to lock in. You need to know how to spend your money, and what gear to equip and what abilities you should be looking for and what the good party compositions are and what party compositions are good for what dungeons.
Wow.
And all of this stuff is really engaging but also extremely dense.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible fit for the Vita screen.
Yeah, it would be. That sounds like a whole lot of micromanagement.
Yeah, I cannot micromanage that much with that tiny of a freaking screen. It might be okay on the PS4. I've not tried it on the PS4. But my point is, I hope Dragon Quest Builders is a little better than that.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry quite as much about menus and whatnot. Of course, you have your typical Minecraft-style inventory, but this is pretty easy to see.
Now I just want Now I want Darkest Dungeon on a tablet. Oh my god, that would be so good.
I thought you were saying it was on a tablet. I guess it's not.
No, it's not on a tablet. Oh. It's like FTL. Like, FTL is the perfect tablet game.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it's the kind of game that can break out on a plane. It has a, like, finite amount of time. And Darkest Dungeon's kind of the same way. Like, you're on a plane, it's like, oh, I'll make a dungeon run now, yeah. Right? As opposed to, like, sitting down in front of your computer and being like, all right, I am now going to play some Darkest Dungeon. That's what I kind of wanted on my... That's what I kind of wanted out of my Vita version.
But yeah.
I was disappointed.
You got a lot of squinting instead.
And now I've just talked myself out of playing the Vita version of Dragon Quest Builders. But maybe I'll play the PS4 version. Maybe that's a game that I want to play on the PS4.
You should at least download the demo. Give it a try.
Indeed. But I digress. So Dragon Quest Builders, I'm not entirely sure what the release date is. Have you been following the release date on this one?
Shoot. I think like October soon.
October soon, yes.
October
along
tomorrow.
With all of the other October soon games.
Oh, gracious. Yeah.
A friend of mine actually imported it. He was so excited about it.
Yeah,
it
I'm
feels
not sure.
like one of those games that's going to be like really good and Jeremy's going to name his game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, it's out on October 11th.
Oh, October 11th. So, okay, so that's
very soon.
Good.
So we will play it and talk about it in next week's episode.
Yes, we will. Guaranteed.
Talk about it some more, I should say. All right, so moving on from Dragon Quest Builders, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that next week. Nadia.
Yes.
Stardew Valley. How many people have you gay married at this point?
You can only gay marry one person. You can only straight marry one person, too. The new update, 1.1, it has two new marriage prospects, Shane and I think Emily for the girl, who I was never a big fan of Emily, but I'm a big fan of Shane.
What? You don't like Emily? How can you not like Emily? She's so cute.
There's so many cute people. They're all too cute. But so she's kind of on the list on the bottom of the list of cute suitors, at least in my opinion. Very learned opinion.
We clearly have very different taste in women.
I think we do. Especially since I keep romancing the men.
Yeah, stop that.
There's you can marry two new characters, and there's a whole bunch of new stuff, like new artisan items, new buildings. You can move your buildings around now, which is like, take that reality.
That's nice. That's pretty nice.
You can also, if you do want to marry someone new, you can divorce your spouse, which is, as you can imagine, that's kind of a hard decision because they're not going to leave town. You're going to see them, and
are they going to be like? Are they super upset with you if you do that?
They're kind of frosty. Like, there's the one screenshot that I saw that made me decide I'll never divorce anyone in the game is Penny. You see her, and in the screenshot, she's just saying, "Please leave me alone." So I was like,
no,
poor Penny, my heart, there it goes. But yeah.
It's a little like in Persona 4. You can romance multiple girls at the same time. Just be aware that there are consequences to your actions.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. People usually don't like being a side chick or a side dude.
Are you still playing Stardew Valley? It sounds like you are.
I really wanted to start playing it again to get all the update stuff, because I stopped for a while because I pretty much did everything in the game. But unfortunately, I have no idea where the heck I put my PC controller. And I tried, hacking my PS4 controller to work instead. It didn't. I got to call my parents. I think they have it at their house.
A PS4 controller will totally work. You just have to get the right drivers.
Yeah, that's what I was doing, but I tried doing that and it didn't work. I was like, I'm going to go play SteamWorld Heist instead.
Yeah, before we get to SteamWorld Heist, I really liked Stardew Valley, and we've talked about this on the podcast before. I think it's one of those games where you have to really be engaged with the world.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, it's one of those games where it's like, so at the very beginning of Stardew Valley, and it's very meaningful that it does this. Like, you're working in a cubicle job. You're, very bored and depressed. And then
there's a skeleton in the cubicle beside you, which gives you an impression of what kind of place this is.
And you flee to the countryside, that very American dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
Leaving the city, going to the country, living out in the wild, starting a farm, whatever. Taking it easy. And I think that really resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And in that regard, Stardew Valley becomes kind of this world that you want to escape to, and you want to sit around and farm crops and go to events and romance people and that sort of, and mine. For those people, I think Stardew Valley is freaking magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for people who are but I think also a lot of people think, well, there's a lot of menial tasks in this game.
Yeah, there is. It's a repetitious game.
Yeah, and for those people, maybe Stardew Valley isn't as intense, enticing, right?
Yeah. Actually, one of the things you can do with the update is it lets you start with a new type of farm, depending on what kind of farming you want to do. So you have farm plots that are for example, filled with rivers if you're more of a fisher, which I was really big into the fishing game, even though a lot of people hated it, I loved it.
It wasn't that bad.
No, I really enjoyed it. It takes some getting used to, but once you do, it's a good way to make money. There's also what's really fascinating is there's a farm where you can get monsters to attack you at night if that's your bag.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to go out there and protect your stuff. There's also farms more developed for ranching or crop growing, and that's pretty cool because even though I'm not going to give up my farm now, and I obviously can't, just change it in the middle of the game anyway, I've always been more of a rancher than a grower in the Harvest Moon games, as well as Stardew Valley, so that sort of choice really appeals to me.
Well, Stardew Valley, if you missed it the first time on PC, it's coming to console.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that too.
PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Wii U. So, do you play with mods at all on the PC version?
No, I don't.
No?
No, I haven't really found one that appeals to me. I know there's mods where you can, like, there's a mod where you can restore Sebastian's bong. That's one to consider. But otherwise, I haven't really found any mods that I've said, oh my god, I have to get this.
Some games are more mod dependent than others.
Yeah.
Like XCOM 2, for example.
Skyrim.
Which came out on console last week. And I did a big write-up about that. And, you know, I love XCOM 2, and I think that it has some really good added content.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's ruined a bit by its final mission. Which, like, makes me less inclined to replay it.
Too tedious, too long.
The final mission is... Well, there are two final missions. One which is, like, pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And one which is just, like, a total letdown in terms of... It's almost like a fan mod made mission.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're just fighting waves of enemies. And it was stupid because, like, I ended up setting up in a particular place, like, outside kind of the final chamber.
Right.
And the monsters just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every time it would flash over to them, you would see them just, like, in this big nest of monsters, like, tons and tons and tons of monsters.
Oh, jeez.
And it looked stupid, to be perfectly honest. It looked really artificial in a way that the rest of the game just had not.
Right.
Like, it felt very rushed. It was so dumb. Like, I was actually taking control of monsters or the aliens with my psychic,
mm-hmm,
and, like, doing giant area of effect attacks on this giant pit of monsters. And up to that point, my computer had run XCOM 2 fine, and it was actually, like, suffering massive slowdown.
Wow, for your computer to do that, that has to be pretty bad. Because you have a pretty pretty intense gaming rigs, I understand.
Well, it wasn't massive slowdown, but it was definitely, like, slowdown.
Yeah.
And I imagine that it would have been slideshow on other computers. And
with old-time
the worst
music.
Part was there were these... The final boss, quote unquote, is like four super enemies that you fought earlier in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my god, it's just like beating them essentially is like a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a very good chance that they will beam behind your party where you're all in cover and completely F it up.
Oh, okay.
And then it's like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to reload now. It's the worst, and I admit there has to be mods out there for XCOM 2 that makes that adds a lot of stuff. XCOM 1, XCOM Enemy Unknown, I mean, had a really fantastic mod called like the Long War or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Added a lot of really good stuff. So that was another digression. But XCOM 2. I mean, it's basically a Western strategy RPG.
Yeah, basically. I haven't played it. It's not really my thing, but it has a pretty big fan base.
Did you like Fire Emblem?
Yeah.
Well, you should give it a shot then.
Yeah, I should. But it's like, I kind of like...
Here's my 5-minute pitch for you, Nadia.
What's that?
Here's my, like, 1-minute pitch for you.
Oh, okay.
XCOM 2 lets you create your own characters and lets you, like, dress them up any way you want. And you can name them and give them bios and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when they die horribly, you will have all of the feels for your creative characters.
Oh no, Captain Underpants. How could you die?
I think I told you that the character that I created for myself, who looked a little like a female Egon, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, she died.
Oh dear.
I forget how she died, but then she got resurrected.
Oh boy.
And chased my last party member all the way to the extraction point. So there's a zombified version of me in my game somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, that happened to me. So, if you decide to put yourself in the game, you get wonderful stories like that.
That is crazy.
That's a really good game, though. I strongly recommend it. It's on console now. You can play it on the PS4.
Yeah, I heard.
Especially, I say, having, like, just totally sold you on it with, like, this terrible final mission.
Well, all I'm right. very open-minded when it comes to final missions and stuff.
Oh, good.
If a game can carry itself until that point, I can practice forgiveness.
Next year, we're totally going to start a What RPG Is Nadia Playing Now segment, where basically I just assign you homework, and I'm just like, all right, Nadia, you're going to play this RPG, and you're going to report back each week.
That would be a lot of fun, actually.
I think it would be a lot of fun, so... All right, last item. Speaking of RPGs that you've been assigned to play, or apparently you're just playing on your own, SteamWorld Heist, which, yes. I want to hear your thoughts. What do you think?
Oh, I've actually finished the 3DS one.
You did?
Yeah, I loved it, but I never got to do the DLC, so that's what I want to do this time around.
Oh, God, I never did the DLC either. Oh, my God, I forgot about the DLC. I'm flying to LA tomorrow. Maybe I will bring it with me and play the DLC.
Yeah, you should.
Oh my God, thank you for reminding me of that.
Oh, you're very welcome. But basically, the reason I'm doing the HD remake is, number one, it just looks gorgeous, and...
Oh, so much prettier.
Yeah, and just being able
to... Though the 3DS version looked good, too.
Yeah, it did. The Image and Forms games always look fantastic. Yeah, so I just kind of wanted to re-experience the game in HD, and, especially since I played SteamWorld Dig on the 3DS, and then I advanced to the Wii U version, and I realized, oh, wow, it looks really, really nice in HD. And it was kind of like playing it all over again, so I figured it would be the same with SteamWorld Heist, and so far it is.
If you haven't played SteamWorld Heist, it's basically like XCOM, but 2D.
Yeah, I definitely...
But without created characters.
That's true, but the characters are perfect, so you don't need to create...
Right, so, well, no, absolutely. The characters have so much personality, and essentially, it's a randomly generated maps, if I recall correctly, but it does a really phenomenal job of making the maps feel not generic.
Yes.
And I think the thing that really stood out to me about this game is that every time you think, oh, this game's going to get really repetitive now, it introduces some interesting new wrinkle.
Mm-hmm.
That you go, oh, that was awesome. Whether it's like a boss or like a new enemy type or a particular mission or like a new character who's now can be part of your party or a new weapon. Like there are a lot of weapons to play to use in this game. The tactics are just spot on in terms of it goes with the AP system where kind of like Valkyria Chronicles where when it's your turn, you walk a little bit. You have a certain number of... You have an action bar. You can walk forward to a certain point and then shoot.
Right.
And the really interesting thing that they do, which I actually like better than XCOM, which if there's one thing that drives me crazy about XCOM, is that you can have like a 90% chance to hit, but that 10% chance will get you every time. So you'll be like literally point blank and somehow miss, and you'll be like, God damn it. Especially on Iron Man mode. But SteamWorld Heist is great because it's like you actually aim.
Yes.
And it can like let you... It sounds awkward, but it can end up... you can do a lot of really neat trick shots, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, because the really neat thing about SteamWorld Heist is that each character specializes in a type of weapon. So for example, the Captain Piper. She specializes in long-distance weapons, so she has a scope, and you can see your line of fire. Whereas, for example, there's other characters who use short-range handguns that kind of fire a scatter of bullets, which are very powerful, but you can't see where they're going to go. So you're basically aiming blind, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you're aiming blind, it can be kind of tough, but I actually got really good at that after a while. But
I always stuck to the sniper scopes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I love the trick
shots.
Or
when possible.
Yeah.
I forget what weapons exactly I used, but I know I definitely had a rocket launcher of some sort.
Yeah, that's
because it was
thing.
Very powerful and could take out a huge number of enemies, like, right at once.
Yeah, like, the most powerful weapons I'm always kind of scared to use because a lot of them have friendly fire.
And I'm a clutch. You can totally wreck your party by mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah. No permadeath, though. Which
no.
is nice.
No.
So nobody's going to get resurrected and come chasing after you.
Why did you leave me?
If they die, I think they just don't get any XP.
Yeah, if they die, depending on what difficulty level you're playing on, you do suffer some loot penalties, but that's about it. There's no permadeath, as you say.
Yeah. So, and it's great. It's like Firefly with robots.
It pretty much is. And I am not a huge fan of either space or steampunk. And this has both. And I just love the world and the characters. They just work so well together.
Oh, my gosh. So I gave this game a perfect score in my review.
Yeah, it deserves it.
It totally deserves it. It holds up extremely well a year later. And like I said, like, I think... it never gets boring. Mm-hmm. Like it is kind of a masterclass in how to take the systems that you and the strategy that foundation that you introduce at the beginning of the game and continue to build on it throughout.
Yes.
In a way that's like, okay, well, here's a new weapon or here's a new enemy type to deal with, or and in that regard, like, it just keeps layering on this stuff. And it has a good story, too.
Like, it has a great story.
It just works.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I was a little disappointed at first that SteamWorld Dig, that story wasn't being concluded because it ended on a cliffhanger. And then this mm-hmm. whole new game comes out that's like completely, literally off the world, which is exploded. So
it's set in the far future or whatever.
Yeah, and I was kind of angry, like, hey, I want to know what happened to Rusty. What's going on here? And so I thought I wouldn't really like SteamWorld Heist, but then I fell in love with it.
Wonderful, wonderful game.
It really is. Image and Form, they have a very sort of sporadic release schedule, but they just put their best into everything they do.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Great soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, great soundtrack,
too. Has a steam-powered giraffe in there as themselves.
You know, Nadia, you know, I play games for work,
so
as you know.
Yes.
And, you know, most of the time I'm like, I enjoy these games, and I will play certain games for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have my comfort games that mm-hmm. I just go back to all the time. Right now it's Hearthstone.
Right.
But it's always a real treat to be reviewing a game and also be completely hooked on it.
I agree.
The point where I just can't set it down. And that was very much the case with SteamWorld Heist for me.
Yes, I didn't, or did I? I reviewed the game for another publication I was writing for at the time, and I completely agree. It's always just really nice to be just blindsided by a surprise, because even though, you know, people think, oh, your jobs are so easy, all you do is play video games all day, that's not quite it. You wind up playing a lot of games that you're lukewarm on or you just outright don't like at all. So just to have that sort of that experience where you play something that you really truly love and you weren't expecting to fall in love with it, it's just like a really unique pleasure.
Yeah, no, that's what keeps me coming back, to be honest. You know, those Dark Souls moments where you go in with no expectations and suddenly go, this is actually a really, really good game, and I think I really love this, and now I can advocate for it. Yes!
Everybody wins.
I love it when that happens. And I went in expecting to like SteamWorld Heist, but it exceeded my expectations.
It was phenomenal. And that's saying a lot, because you're a real strategy fan.
I am a strategy fan. I think it's more to the point, like, I think it would have just been so easy for them to fall into the trap of recycling content, but... Mm-hmm. With more enemies, you know, whatever, longer levels. And they didn't do that.
No.
Right? So, I am getting repetitive now at this point. That's why it was like, okay, it stayed interesting throughout. Now I really want to play the DLC because I got the note, and I think I even got a code for the DLC, but I was like, I will do this later, and then I totally forgot.
Yeah, so. And that's what happened to me, unfortunately. I was just like, oh, I got to play this now. Oop, I totally forgot. And that's totally on me and not on Image and Form, because I'm sure it's great.
All right, anyway, SteamWorld Heist, it's like on everything now.
Pretty
much. You can
get
it on Vita, you can get it on 3DS, PS4, Steam. I strongly recommend it. Please, please go and give these good people money so that they can continue to make these awesome games.
I agree.
We'll be right back.
All right, we're back, and now we have another guest on our podcast. That is Bob Mackey.
Hey, everybody, it's me.
Hello,
it
Bob.
Is Bob. Bob, yep. Who was sequestered in his apartment over the past weekend playing PlayStation VR. Are you back in the land of the real world, like, or are you still in Lawnmower Man world?
I have not become Job. I did not make all the phones ring at once yet.
I have never seen the Lawnmower Man movie. I've just read the short story by Stephen King, so the whole VR element just blows my mind. I don't understand.
They have
what
nothing
it's about.
To do with each other. In fact, they have so little to do with each other that Stephen King sued the filmmakers, I think. Which didn't stop them from making Lawnmower Man 2, Job's War. Yes, I know all of these things, and I hate myself.
I'll admit, the best thing about this whole VR coverage thing was mostly getting Bob's frustrated texts as he was like, oh my god, so many wires, so many wires.
There are, I mean, I'll go into this one from us to you, or perhaps I already did, but just the sheer patchwork of technologies you need to like stitch together, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah, you should go check out the VR conversation on From Us to You. But first, we're going to talk about Yo-Kai Watch, which was a game that you reviewed, I think, last week. It's a sequel, of course.
Wednesday.
Oh, what are the two versions, Fleshy Souls and Bony Spirits?
It's either Bony Spirits or Fleshy Souls or Bony Souls and Fleshy Spirits. I forget what they are, but it's... From what I remember, the first Yo-Kai Watch in Japan had two versions, which they combined into one, and they decided to release both versions of the second game here this time, which feels a little misguided to me, considering the fact that the games only differ, I think, in terms of exclusive Yo-Kai, which are the monsters you collect.
Yeah.
Oh, they do it with Pokemon.
Yeah, but Pokemon is, like, popular. They get away with it.
Yo-Kai Watch is popular when it came out.
What's that? Yeah, I guess it was a big experiment, but I feel like this could be jumping ahead of myself, but I feel like we don't need two Yo-Kai Watches yet at this point in time.
Yeah, I agree, because I went to a Yo-Kai Watch 2 event that Nintendo was holding in Toronto, and there were actually a fair amount of kids there. It was a lot of fun, but it is not the Pokemon crowd pleaser that I think Nintendo wants it to be.
Why not? Why is it... What is it about Pokemon, for God's sake?
This is going to sound weird because Pokemon is extremely Japanese, but ultimately I feel like Yo-Kai Watch is too Japanese for that mass market that mass market audience they want. And they're really aware of that, which is why it's so intensely localized to make it as little Japanese culturally as possible, which is why it takes place in Springdale and you are running around a Japanese as fuck town. But everyone's like, nope, this is not Japan. I'm certainly not at a shrine.
Springdale.
Is there a Hellmouth in this town?
Yeah.
It could be.
Well, that's
God
where
knows.
All the yokai come from. Oh,
well, they definitely tried to
sense.
Make like yokai less of a cultural ghost thing and more of a mischief maker sort of thing.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Because I remember you wrote the article before even the first Yo-Kai Watch came out, and you were like, yokai is a very Japanese thing, unlike the monsters in Pokemon. So how is Yo-Kai Watch going to translate?
Here's the thing, like, I feel like this is not a concern as much as it was in the 80s and early 90s, but I think they're trying to get in front of the whole, like, Japanese mythology issue. They were afraid of maybe fundamentalists from different religions, you know, claiming this is like a Satan-worshipping game, as they have with Pokemon and many other things.
Yes.
But because in their explanation, Nintendo of America, whoever wrote the copy, they're like, what are yokai? They're yokai! They're fun, crazy spirits, blah, blah, blah. Don't forget about, you know, the ties to, you know, animism and things like that. Which is fine. I mean, yokai has a very, very broad definition. It could be anything from like Frankenstein to like, you know, those like hopping umbrella ghosts you see in a lot of Japanese like ghost stories and things like that. It has a very broad connotation, but it really is tied into like animistic beliefs in Japanese religion and things like that.
Yeah, like Shintoism.
All right. What do you like Yo-Kai Watch 2? Your review of it was kind of meh. You seemed a lot more negative on it than you were in the first game.
Yes. I want to love Level 5, and I do like the Leighton games, and I have like some of their work, but I feel like their RPGs that aren't Dragon Quest have this unnecessary amount of tedium baked into them that I just don't understand. It should be obvious from a like design level, like this takes too long, this is unnecessary, this is too convoluted. But these issues keep popping up in their RPGs. And I will say that they made Yo-Kai Watch 2 a little more refined than the first one. The map actually works. You don't have to jump through like 9 menus to find out where you are in the world. It's all there on your screen. You can see a bigger view of the world just touching a button. It's great. I mean, just getting lost in a very samey-looking town was one of my bigger issues with Yo-Kai Watch 1. But ultimately, the fundamental act you're doing in the game, which is capturing the yokai, it takes forever to do. And I wrote about an example of this in my review, where it's like one of the initial quests is just like, we're going to teach the player how to capture yokai. So to capture yokai, you need to figure out what food they like out of like over a dozen food items, feed it to them in battle, and then pray to God that they will join you after the battle is over. It felt like it was like a joke on me, like the game was bugged or something, but I think it took me 9 tries fighting the same yokai over and over, feeding it the same food over and over, wasting 8 items before it would join me. And this is like in the very first part of the game. If you want to capture all of these creatures, you're going to just have a stroke, I think, because it's just it's so tedious, and it makes me upset because like this is a game for kids, and you should really be streamlining a lot of this. I feel like Pokemon, it's a very simple process. You throw the ball, it shakes a little, you either capture it or you don't. With Yo-Kai Watch, there's a lot of ambiguity, there's a lot more variables at play, and ultimately, like, it's just too much work to, you know, build a collection of these admittedly great-looking monsters that are just really, really fun to watch in battle, and just, like, they're a lot grosser and a lot more out there than Pokemon designs, which I like, but there's just that tedium is just you fight against it throughout the entire game, and it just makes it a very unfun experience.
That's too bad.
But you said it wasn't all that different from the first game either.
Yes, in fact, like the first major chunk of the game, you're running through all of the same stuff you did in the first game in the same places with the like the thin conceit, like, oh, you have amnesia or something like that. it's very, very cheaply done. In fact, in my review, which I've referenced a few times, please read it on usgamer.net. I had the same feeling I haven't had since I played Mega Man Battle Network 2, where I popped the game in and started playing it and was like, wait a minute, am I playing the first game? Did they screw up? Is this like a different ROM or something? But no, you're just like in the same place doing the same things, and it takes forever for you to like break out of that. And I feel like this sequel might have been rushed just to capitalize on how much this series was taking off in 2013 and 2014 in Japan.
And it's not really taking off anymore in Japan. The consensus that I was when I was over there was Yo-Kai Watch was just more level 5, a fad that wasn't going to have much of a long-lasting impact, where Pokemon is forever.
Level 5 is going through a lot of weird changes. I think something tells me that their relationship with Nintendo got a little sour, or something happened that we don't know about, because they just seem to be shifting everything to mobile. And I can't think of another 3DS level 5 game that's coming out. I'm pretty sure that that upcoming like RPG by the Secret of Mana guy is not level 5. I can't think of anything coming out for a Nintendo platform, but I feel like they're moving all of their stuff that was known for Nintendo onto mobile. Like there's a new Layton game without Layton.
The new Layton game's on 3DS as well.
What's that?
The new Layton game is on 3DS as well.
There's also another Ni No Kuni coming out on what, PS4?
Yeah, I think so. But the new Layton is definitely 3DS as well as a mobile.
Okay, so I totally missed that, and I apologize, but I don't know. I feel like they have they've been off their game recently, as much as I kind of have a distaste for their RPGs, and I don't know. Like, I have a feeling Yo-Kai Watch could have gotten better in Japan. I don't know if 3 is the game that I want Yo-Kai Watch to be. That came out in Japan in July, and apparently the spinoff Yo-Kai Watch Busters is pretty fun, but for me, like, it's just too much work for a RPG that's too simple to be rewarding, I think. I mean, if it had that simplicity and it was also easier to catch these monsters, it would be a much better experience. But I feel like I'm fighting it and I'm not getting a lot in return, for as much as I like just how charming the world is and how great the characters are and things like that.
Right.
I think one of the problems with Yo-Kai Watch, or in level 5 in general, is that their games are generally very attractive. They're flashy in their own way. But I feel like the games are just one cog in their transmedia machine. It's kind of designed to market stuff like the TV show and the toys and all that stuff. versus everything kind of exists, everything existing in the service of the games, I suppose. Like, it feels like the games are a cog of this rather than everything kind of springing naturally out of the game. They are designing these games with a giant marketing plan in mind, essentially.
No, I agree. I mean, on the surface, they look like very, very polished games, and on a superficial level, they are, but that refinement I expect from a good RPG, from like a Nintendo property, just isn't there. Like, a big example I can point to is the fact that in the battle system, the battles are all automatic. Essentially, you interact with it in some slight ways, and you're just waiting to activate your yokai's super moves. And to activate these super moves, you need to play a little mini game on the touch screen. And in the first one, there were maybe like three of these mini games. Now there are five, but they're just kind of the same across the board. It doesn't matter what yokai you're playing. Sometimes you'll be tracing a pattern. Sometimes you'll be poking like little bubbles. Sometimes you'll be like scratching the screen, and it just never changes. And I feel like there should be more character to the moves you're doing that reflect like who the yokai is you're using at that moment. And it's kind of like in Fantasy Life, how if any of you guys played that, the mini games for all the jobs were the same across the board. Like, no matter what you were doing, from cooking to chopping down wood, like every mini game you played was the same for every job, which felt like any other developer would take a little more time with this, but they built a system and they moved on without refining it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I really loved Fantasy Life, but at the same time, it's something about it felt like it could have been more.
Well, they're making a sequel, aren't they?
Yeah, so hopefully...
For mobile, right?
No, they're actually... I think the mobile game is just basically the first game transferred over.
I see.
But who knows? But you're right. Level 5 seems a bit scattershot these days. Like, what are they up to? We don't know. I just want to see a sequel to Leighton Mystery Room.
I mean, I'm not surprised at all that they're moving over to mobile.
Too.
Yeah, that was a great game. The game Leighton Brothers Mystery Room was about... Professor Layton's crazy ass son. It was just a lot of fun, but we're not
really really good soundtrack, like a jazz soundtrack by Yuzo Koshiro. Only Level 5 would do that for a mobile game.
Yeah, it's a very classy sort of mobile game.
I'm not surprised at all that they're moving over to mobile. If you go to Japan, like, mobile owns everything, and they're a Japanese company first, and they have to see that dedicated handhelds have become a very niche proposition. And they are nothing if not a mass market publisher these days. So it was inevitable. So yeah, expect a lot of mobile games from Level 5 going forward. But Bob, we just spent the past like several minutes totally trashing Yo-Kai Watch 2.
No, I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. It's like literally as middle of the road as you can get. And I've been a fan of the 2.5 score because a lot of games just sort of do nothing for me, but they're also not bad. So it's just like, this is the flattest line on my quality graph I could possibly come up with.
Right.
It's a 50, isn't it, on Metacritic? But whatever.
Yeah, they do. I mean, a 50 means something different in the grand scheme of things, but we have our, you know, code that we stand by, and, you know, it's very complicated. That's a whole different conversation, I think.
Is there anything that you particularly liked about Yo-Kai Watch 2?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I do like the presentation is very good. The menus are very fun and clean and nice to look at, like sort of like in a Persona-y way. Not as stylish as that. Ultimately, the characters, the monsters themselves, the yokai, are really fun. It's always fun to see which ones you'll encounter. They are ugly in a cute way, in a way that only Japanese character designers can do. Like, sort of if you ask them to make Garbage Pail Kids, they would come up with the yokai, because yokai they're sweaty, they have snot coming out of their nose, they fart. I mean, it's like, it's supposed to be like a fun, gross game. And I remember I grew up in the 90s where, like, they sold squirt guns that shot slime, and Ren and Stimpy was on TV, and like was like about gross out humor. So it kind of brings me back to that era of like kids entertainment, and you know, kids love gross out stuff. So I like that it really embraces that.
All right. Before I let you go, Bob, really quickly, as we already mentioned, you spent the entire weekend in the world of VR. And I'm just curious, now that you've apparently been converted into a believer, as we are told in our review, do you think that VR is viable for RPGs?
In its current state, I really don't think so. At least with PSVR, I found that it's kind of hard to read text. with VR. So like everything you encounter in the VR games, like in Batman, I feel like it's a large print world. Like everyone in the world is like seeing impaired, so everything is like printed very large. And I feel like any kind of extended experience that involves reading, and probably that wouldn't if you're playing a VR RPG, but I feel like anything with like numbers or a lot of reading would be a bad time. And frankly, where VR is now, the kind of extended experience you want to have with an RPG, it really can't sustain. Like every VR experience I've played, even if it was a longer one, would chop itself up into distinct like 5 to 10 minute chunks, because it realizes like you need a break from this. It is very fatiguing, and not just in terms of like motion sickness and nausea and stuff like that, which really didn't affect me. I think just that kind of stimulation, our monkey brains can only handle so much of that before it's time to like take a breath of fresh air, you know, walk around. And again, I think the equipment needs to be much more lightweight, wireless, and a lot less fatiguing for it to sustain an RPG experience like that.
I think that it could work really well with a game like Skyrim.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It would make the combat less awkward, and it I don't think it would appreciably affect the actual UI, because I mean, I think that you can make the UI pretty VR friendly. And ultimately, when you're talking to different characters, it would almost be like a movie. I think the biggest thing with that kind of game is probably having to deal with motion sickness, because designers haven't really figured out how the whole, like, how to move, like, walk in the thing without making people vomit everywhere.
Yes, exactly. In the Batman game I play, which is not an RPG, but it does underline your point, whenever you move somewhere as Batman, like the screen just like fades to black and then fades back up. It's really afraid to have you actually be moving in the world. A lot of these VR experiences are kind of standing still in an environment, which I think this may sound odd, but I think like VR is going to be the new home for like the new version of adventure games, which that Batman game I played essentially is, and walking simulators. There are so many demos I played at home, so many games I played that are essentially like Disneyland style dark rides, where you just kind of sit down and have an experience, and you're not really asked to perform on any level. Just sort of like, you know, take it in, look at things, like play with the world around you. We're only at that level right now. For something like an RPG, I think we need the technology to be a little closer to the ideal.
I'm not going to lie, Bob. The thing that sold me on VR was you telling me that I could play Mega Man 2 on it.
Nice.
Yes, yes. In fact, like the coolest thing about the, well, not the coolest thing, but one of the cooler things is you can play anything, any PS4 game on your VR helmet, and it just makes it look like you have a giant screen in front of you. And that's really cool. I mean, obviously the resolution is not probably where you want it to be, but I didn't find it that distracting and just sort of fun to be that close to games, you know.
That close. Your eyes are getting sucked into the television.
It's like getting a big hug from your favorite game.
I want to hug. I want to kiss Solid Snake right in his cheek.
He would appreciate that so much.
All right, Bob, thanks for dropping by. You can find your review of the PlayStation VR over on the main site, usgamer.net. And if we want to hear like lots and lots of in-depth discussion, go check out our flagship podcast From Us to You, which will already be up.
Yes, and I'm sure I'll have lots of VR game reviews next week. I've got so many games to play and so many games I have played and still need to write about.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Right, and we're finished here. Axe of the Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, wherever podcasts are sold. Check out usgamer.net for all of our RPG coverage and game coverage and everything. I've been writing a lot about sports games lately, but I promise I'll get back on the RPG beat. As you may know, I previewed Persona 5 last week. Mm-hmm. I played the import version. I also streamed it, and you can check out a video of that I posted over on Facebook. Go check that out whenever you have an opportunity. Let's see. You can follow me on Twitter at @the_catbot, Bob @BobServo, Nadia @NadiaOxford, And yeah, also check out Nadia's site, Tiny Girl Tiny Games. Nadia, do you have anything interesting that you've written about lately, or have you just been too busy?
Actually, I haven't written anything particularly interesting lately, but I was recently on the Square Roots podcast, where I talked about Secret of Mana for a while, and that was a lot of fun. So please do check that out. It's a great podcast run by great people who all have very shiny dispositions and teeth.
Square Roots podcast. So it's about Square Enix, then.
Yeah, it's Square Enix. What they all do is they play a game. At a Square game, of course, and then they all kind of converge and talk about it. Since they still had a lot of questions about Secret of Mana's story, they recruited me to try to answer some of them.
Hey, if anybody's going to talk about Secret of Mana, then it's going to be you. So yeah, it sounds like an interesting podcast. You should definitely go listen to it. Speaking of things that you should do, you should send us underrated RPG pitches.
Mm-hmm.
The RPG underrated RPG pitches have dried up a little bit. I want to hear about the RPGs that you love.
Yes, please.
That
send
other
us.
People do not, and I want to read them on the podcast.
And I want to talk about them.
Yeah, so we can talk about them. I have a few more in my pocket that I will read at some point. But yeah, come on, advocate. Tell me about the RPGs that you love and why we should love them. Send me drop me a line at cat.bailey@usgamer.net or send me a DM over on the site. All right, so that's it for us. Next week we'll be back and we'll be talking about Dragon Quest Builders, and guess what? Pokemon! It's just around the corner.
Yes.
Though in a way we already talked about Pokemon a whole bunch in this episode because we were all like, oh, Yo-Kai Watch, totally not as good as Pokemon, right? LOL.
There's always something to talk about with Pokemon.
There is, in fact, always something to talk about with Pokemon. The demo's coming right up. Apparently, mm-hmm. You're going to get Ash's Greninja from the anime.
That is crazy, but yes.
Yeah, well, I don't really want Ash's Greninja. It's a loser.
We don't want your stupid Greninja. Your stupid
Lost
Greninja
in the Ash. Tournament, shaking my head. As always, God, Ash, why are you such a loser? Also, can I have your Fountain of Youth or whatever?
Yes, I
wanna stay.
I can really use that.
I want to be 10 years old forever, like you. All right, Nadia, thanks for being on the show. And for me, myself, Nadia, and Bob, thanks for listening. We'll see you again real soon. Until next time, happy adventuring.